Hello, this is Dr. David Friedman, host of To Your Good Health Radio. Over 61 million Americans are living with a mental health condition. Anxiety in young adults has surged nearly 140% since 2010. And yet we have more therapists, apps, self-help books, and mental health awareness campaigns than ever in history. So why are the numbers still going in the wrong direction? What if the most powerful thing you could do for your mental health isn't obsessing over everything that's going wrong, but simply asking, what's going right? This paradigm shift is backed by neuroscience, decades of clinical practice, and one of the most talked about psychiatric frameworks of our time. Joining us is Dr. Paul Conte. He's worked with some of the most well-known people on the planet, and what they all have in common isn't their fame or fortune. It's losing touch with the fundamental human drive that once rediscovered opened the door to peace, purpose, creativity, and joy. Stay tuned. This episode can literally change your mind. And it all starts now.
It's To Your Good Health Radio with number one best-selling author and renowned wellness expert, Dr. David Friedman, changing lives just for the health of it.
Our next guest is a psychiatrist, author, and founder of Pacific Premier Group, a comprehensive mental health practice serving clients across the United States and internationally. He trained at Stanford University School of Medicine and completed his psychiatric residency at Harvard, where he was appointed chief resident. He later served on the faculty at Harvard before founding his own clinic. His trauma work has earned him devoted followers, including Lady Gaga, Kim Kardashian, Ariana Huffington, and Mel Robbins. His four-part series on the Huberman Lab podcast became one of the most talked about mental health conversations on the internet. His book is called What's Going Right, A Powerful New Method for Optimizing Your Mental Health. Welcome to the show, Dr. Paul Conte.
Thank you for having me, and thank you for that kind introduction.
Yeah, so great for you joining. You know, the mental health crisis numbers is staggering, and your whole approach flips the script. Instead of focusing on what's broken, you're asking, what's going right? Explain what that entails.
The way that we get to identifying and fixing the problems in our lives is coming from a position of strength. So there's way more going right in everyone who would be listening to this than there is not going right. And if we approach ourselves in that way, then we're not afraid of our mental health. It's not a black box that scares us. And that is often our approach, working within a mental health system that is looking to make diagnoses, to just say, what is wrong? It doesn't give us a mechanism of understanding, and it's scary, right? It leads us to turn the other way instead of saying, like we do with our physical health, hey, there are routes here to understanding, and I can build good mental health just like I'm building good physical health. So what's going right isn't telling us to ignore our problems or to look away from our problems. It's saying the way that we get to them is by looking at our whole selves, a perspective of the whole person, what's going on in that person's life, what their story is, how things have developed to this point, what their strengths are. And now we can look at, okay, what does that person want or need to be different? It's an empowered perspective that comes from information and practical routes to change.
Yeah, I know you describe three internal drives that shape pretty much everything, how we think, feel, and do. One is the assertion drive, the pleasure drive, and the generation drive. Can you briefly break those down for us?
Humans have historically been thought to have two drives. So innate to every human is assertion, or sometimes called aggression, and the search for pleasure. So assertion or aggression and pleasure are in us, and it's been thought or accepted that those are the two things that are innate in us, but that doesn't explain how we can work together in groups to create beyond ourselves. It doesn't explain altruism. It doesn't explain doing good things in the world or wanting there to be good things in the world just because, like, we know that's better and we have a care and concern outside of ourselves and for the future of other people and also of the planet. There's so much more than just assertion and pleasure, and that's the generative drive in us. It's not only kept our species alive, but it's the best of us as human beings, right? It's the best of humanness to create, to be able to see and envision beyond ourselves. And when we're living lives that are lived through the lens of the generative drive, then we can look at ourselves. We can bring our mental health into a healthy and stable place where we have a strong foundation and we're living our lives in ways that help us to stay healthy. So for example, we're not just asserting ourselves more. If I can control the world around me more, like that'll be better and that'll make me happier. And we can, for example, try to control too much assertion, right? In ways that aren't bringing gratification or aren't doing good in our lives. So if we're governed by the generative drive, right, this is what helps us stay healthy. And this is what is true of humans when humans find happiness. So there's enough data and studies and clinical experience to tell us what's going on in people when they found happiness or they're aging and feeling good about themselves through the life cycles. And it all comes back to being anchored to the best of our humanness, to being able to see beyond ourselves. And this is really the opposite of a mental health system that wants to just give us numbers, say what's wrong with us, and then polish the hood, you know, throw medicine at something. Sometimes medicines are important and needed, but it has to come. Any help to us has to come through understanding. And it's got to start with understanding what's true about us and what's best about us as human beings. And that's the generative drive.
Yeah. I'm curious what happens when our drives fall out of balance and how do people usually misread those signs?
Well, when our drives fall out of balance, there's something, there will be some negative. There will be some consequence if our drives are out of balance. So for example, too much assertion, it leads to trying to over-control, and that leads to frustration and disappointment. And we never get out of over-controlling what we hope to, right? And it creates a lot of interpersonal conflict. So just one example. Same thing with too little assertion. So learned helplessness, for an example, where a person isn't even trying anymore to make things better within their family unit or to find a better job or to find a romantic partner, where the person is just not asserting themselves because they don't feel that any good can come of it. So as you can see, our drives for assertion and pleasure can get out of balance. So too much pleasure seeking, and we're just looking for something to give us relief from suffering in the moment, for example. Too little pleasure drive, and we don't even feel that anything good can come in our lives. So you can see how we can get out of balance, and that can, for example, push towards depression, right? Or it could push towards substance abuse because we want some relief in the moment. So if we look at ourselves, the foundational aspects of our mental health, there's a structure of self and a function of self, just like there's a structure of our bodies and a function of our body. So if we're looking at the foundational elements of our mental health, and we're looking at how our drives may be out of balance, which really means we just need more generative drive. More is always better with the best of our humanness. So if assertion and pleasure are out of balance, or our foundational elements of mental health are out of balance, the answer is always comes through the lens of the generative drive. But we have to understand how we're out of balance and what's the route to bringing things back into balance. So yes, there's theory here, but the idea isn't that this gets more esoteric. What I'm trying to do is to anchor to a simple goodness that is true of all of us, and to anchor to that simple goodness in a way that says to people, you can understand yourself. You don't have to be afraid of your mental health, and you can see what's out of balance or what's not the way it needs to be, whether it's in your drives or in, for example, the structure of yourself. We can figure that out, and then we can figure out how to change it. So we don't have to be afraid of our mental health. Like, we're generally not afraid of our physical health, right? There's a whole wellness industry. We want to build good physical health. We need to, and we can do the same with our mental health.
Yeah. I'm curious, have you seen like A-type workaholics that maybe do the assertion and they skip the pleasure drive and go right to generation because they're just work, 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 and no play? Can that be an out of balance issue?
Sure. The idea there, that person would not be, the generative drive would not be governing, right? So in the example you described, the assertion drive is governing. There's too much assertion. I'll control more. I'll have more success. I'll make more money, whatever it may be. I'll do that and I'll feel better. But they're finding there's too much assertion and too little pleasure, right? So maybe that person then needs to do less, right? It would be more generative, for example, to say do less, right, that's achievement oriented, because the person's already achieving at a high level and they may need more time to just, for example, be with people they love, or more time to take care of themselves physically, to get enough rest. The answer isn't always doing more, right? And doing more isn't always generative, right? So if your generative drive is governing and you're not doing enough, right, then that will help you do more. If your generative drive is governing and you're asserting yourself too much and trying to control too much, that will help you then do less. So it's the best of our humanness, the generative drive, that helps us to see how might I be out of balance And how do I bring myself into balance and then stay there?
That's interesting. I know self-inquiry is central to your work, but unfortunately, looking inward can kind of be uncomfortable for most people. How can we approach this process with curiosity instead of dread?
Well, I think by being empowered, we're afraid of things we don't understand. That's natural for human beings. It has always been the case with humans, and that means we want to understand. So why is it that it makes us afraid to look inside? Right? It's only because of mystery, because of darkness. Meaning we're not shedding light on it, so we're afraid. What will I find in the dark? But if we say, no, it isn't, it does not have to be that way. We can shine the light so you can look at yourself, and it's okay. You're not going to find some terrible secret to the vast, vast majority of people. That is not what a person finds when they look inside. What they find is the real truth and the real facts of what's going on in them and how to change. So if we're not afraid to look at that, if we bring compassionate curiosity to look at ourselves, then I can see, for example, if I say, look, my mood has been lower, I get depressed. And when I get depressed, I don't function as well. And then things aren't going as well at work and at home. Why do I have to be afraid to see that? Right? Or if I'm trying to over control, why do I have to be afraid to see that when things aren't going well for me, or I've had some setback or some trauma in my life, I can respond by trying to over control things. And that's not making things better. It's making things worse. Right? We don't have to be afraid to look at ourselves and to look at what we find, as long as the lights are on, where we have a route to understanding. And I say, okay, if I'm trying to over control, what might that mean? Right? It doesn't mean something that I'm a terrible person. What it means is I want to look at that and see how I compensate for distress, anxiety, lack of control. What am I doing? And how can I look at that and do it in a healthy way? Just like someone who's, well, how am I responding to stress? If I'm responding to stress by stress eating, right? I'm eating too much. That's not good for my physical health. It's okay, let's look at that. Right? What else can be done? Right? We don't have to be afraid of looking at our physical health or our mental health if there are routes to understanding and change. How about we look at ourselves with compassionate curiosity and the lights on instead of fear, which will come if the lights are off and we just don't have a route to understanding and we're afraid of what we're going to find.
So true. I know the enemy, you know, for most people, for productivity and happiness is that inner critic, that little devil's advocate, that voice inside our head. And most people wish they could silence theirs, but you say we should actually listen to it. Share why. Why is that a good thing?
Well, to listen to what is the voice inside of us telling us, and it may be telling us something helpful or it may not be. So if the voice is critical and it's just telling you over and over again that like things will never be okay and you're not good enough for what you're trying to do, that's not helpful, right? Then all we're doing is persecuting ourselves, right? And that doesn't get us anywhere. So let's take a look at that and say, I don't want to be saying negative things to myself over and over again, while I'm trying to achieve something, say, make my life better, be healthier, have healthier friends in my life, find romance or a better job. Like, I don't want to be telling myself inside that I'm not good enough for that. Like, let's look at that and change it, right? Let's not say that to ourselves. But we might be telling ourselves things that we need to look at. Like, it might be that if I'm trying to over control, that when I do that and then people get frustrated with me and I feel worse, there's a voice in myself, inside of me telling me, hey, like, that's not working. Right now, there would be a voice to listen to, right? So like anything else, we wouldn't say, well, listen to the voice of someone outside of you. We say, well, I don't listen to what that person is saying to you. If it's helpful, like, let's take that inside, right? If it's not helpful and it's just beating up on you, like, we don't want to take that inside. We want to reject that. So we can look at ourselves and we don't have to be afraid of what we're going to find. Even if we find, gosh, I'm just saying these awful things to myself over and over again, we don't have to be afraid of that. In fact, we should be afraid of not identifying that, because then it will go on. If we look at it, we can say, well, why am I saying that, right? Maybe I really am living out of accord with myself, right? And I should be living differently. And I know it, right? I want to be healthier. Maybe I want to take better care of myself. Or I want to be better to the people around me. So maybe it really is telling me something. Let me go look at that voice. And if it's just beating up on me, I want to see that and I want to change that, because that's not helpful.
Yeah, such a good point. Yeah.
Yeah, we can shine the light everywhere inside of us, which is another way of saying bring compassionate curiosity. And then we don't have to be afraid of what we're going to find, including in what we're saying to ourselves. It's all information. It's grist for the mill, so to speak. And if we look at it that way, we don't have to be afraid of it. We can sort of be excited about it. I'm going to look at myself and what I'm going to find, it's certainly going to be informative and it's going to help me be healthier, which is what a good therapy process is. It's not depressing. It's not scary. We may have to look at difficult things and it's not easy and it may involve some sadness along the way. Okay, that's what hard work is, but we can bring change, and good therapy processes really do leave people better off on the other side. They're optimistic and life-affirming processes. And I want us to all be able to see that, just like it's optimistic and life-affirming to say, hey, I can look at my physical health and I can be healthier. I can do that. Let me go avail myself of the tools around me. How do I understand myself and be healthier? We don't have to be afraid of doing that with our mental health.
So true. I know you've worked with some incredibly high profile people, celebrities, executives, people who seemingly have it all. Like, you know, we looking from the outside, man, that person's so lucky. But what's the common thread that you see people who are struggling regardless of their status or success? Because some of these people are depressed, they're miserable, but on the outside, they look happy. Why?
I think we're all up against the same thing. And whether a person has fame or wealth, or some of us who at times are just struggling to get up and get ourselves through the day, you know, we're trying to feel good enough about ourselves. And very often what is true is a person has a really good reason to feel good about themselves, but they're not looking at that, right? We make the story about the negative, and then that makes us afraid. But if we look at what's going right, then we can change the negative. So someone, how many times has this one said to me, oh, there's like, it's just like, everything is awful, right? And I can't get myself anywhere. I'm not worthwhile. Like, so this one's basically telling me this story. And I learned that they really aren't having pleasure in their life, because maybe they're getting up early in the morning and they have these quiet victories all day of getting through their day and doing things that are of service to others, right? And maybe that's within the home, or it's someone who has a job that's a helping job to other people. And because they're not taking any pleasure or pride, they don't see that there's so much pleasure and pride to be taken from that. They are persevering, they're enduring, they should get to feel good about what they're doing. And if they can feel that way, that yes, what I'm doing is serving other people, someone who's taking care of a family, they say, this is what I'm doing all day. Like, I should get to feel good about this, that I am making this sacrifice for others. And I want to take pride in that. That's the point where we can start saying, okay, and now can we work in some time for you? Right? What is something you really enjoy that you don't get to do because all the time and energy and attention is going outward to other people? We can get a person to look at that, but it's never going to happen if the person is doing valuable things all day and just sees themselves as a failure, right? And this is what happens. And it can happen if someone is famous and wealthy and they're giving money away in philanthropy and they have a good message that they're using through their fame. They cannot feel good enough, just like any of us cannot feel good enough, if we're not looking at the whole story of self and we're just building the story around our fears, right? And our perceived faults of self.
Yeah. I treat a lot of celebrities and I've noticed a lot of them suffer from the grass is greener on the other side mentality. It's like it's always better and bigger on the other side. But I always say, yeah, but you got to mow that grass on the other side. You still got to take care of where you are, and it's always bigger and better. And I think that some people should maybe just be still and enjoy where they are instead of always thinking they have to excel. And that's just from my viewpoint, is like you seemingly have it all, but you want more and you want more and you get more and you want more than that. It's like Breaking Bad, the Walter White, the wife said, when is enough enough? How much more money do you need? And they're laying on this giant billions of dollars. When is the limit? When will you be happy? You remember that scene?
Right. The thought is that often that maps to like greed, right? And sometimes it does, but most of the time, the vast majority, that's not what it's mapping to. Like, why does the person want more? Because they don't feel good enough. Like, I find myself saying over and over again to people, no matter what walk of life, that you have to own what's yours. What am I saying is you have to own what you're achieving. Right? You can't say that you're not doing anything worthwhile if like you have these quiet victories all day of getting through your day and doing what you need to do so that life can continue. Right? You have to own that you're doing that and what it takes of you, right? What it requires of you to every day to get up and do that. The same thing of someone who thinks they need more money or more fame, like they're not then seeing like, what is it that I've gained? What have I done with it? Let me look at what is already mine. Because if I don't, I'll go try and find more of it. Right. And if I'm not already owning what's mine, finding more of it isn't going to make me feel better. Right. Which is why we need to have a life narrative and understanding of self that says, where am I? How have I gotten here? What is there to feel good about? What are the strengths in me that I've gotten here? And it's from there that we can look at what needs to change And it might be that the person needs to slow down and take stock of what they've gotten for themselves. Maybe they do need to make a change, right, in their life and stop, say, earning and doing and do something that's more generative for them. Maybe, right? But the whole point is we're all human, but we all follow patterns. So we can look at ourselves just like we're all human. So our bodies have the same organs and they kind of work in the same way. So we can use a route to understanding of our physical health. The same is true of our mental health. We're all human. So we all share this. So there's a way that we can understand ourselves and bring change. We don't have to be afraid to do that, but we do have to look at ourselves, and it doesn't have to be scary. I mean, it should be something where we get to be so interested in. Is I want to understand myself better. You know why? I want to have the best life I can, right? If there's something not going well, I want to change that. We can't do that if we're so scared and we're looking away because we're afraid of mental health, because if we look at it, we're going to find something awful and we're going to get 14 diagnoses. That will not get us there, but we can get there. It just requires a different route, a route that makes sense and is anchored to truth and to just really common sense in a way.
Yeah, I know. And something we don't do is we don't celebrate our victories enough. I had an author on and he's like 15, 17, and 18 New York Times bestsellers. And I said, what's your biggest weakness? And he says, well, I just hit New York Times. And rather than celebrate, I'm finishing up my next book and moving on to the next endeavor. So let's celebrate and enjoy where we are. That's so true. Let me ask you, if somebody's listening right now and they feel stuck, they're not in crisis, but they're just going through a mundane, everyday grind, lacking purpose in life, what can they do? You got any tips?
To say or write a narrative, like just to write half a piece of paper, 3 or 4 paragraphs typed out or words spoken of like, what is going on with me, right? How did I get here and what am I doing? And very often it'll surprise us, right? It'll surprise us to see what our narrative is and does it match with our life? So someone who describes themselves as lazy, right? And then we match that to the fact that they're not lazy. They're working 14 hours a day, right, to get by, but they want more from what they're doing. It's just an example. So you say, well, okay, now that you put it outside of yourself, you see that like you're calling yourself lazy, right? And that's not going to get you anywhere. And it's not true. We're not trying to shift to a different way of looking at it because it feels better. We're saying, no, we want to shift to a way that's true. There's a lot of effort, say, in that person going out. Now, is the effort in the best way? Are they using that energy and time in a way that serves them best? I don't know, right? Let's learn about that, right? But we have to put outside of ourselves, what am I saying to myself? What's my self-talk? What's my story of self? Because I have to have a way of thinking about myself and describing myself that is real and true. What is it that I've overcome to get here? Am I building the story just around the negative? Like you said, the author, he said that person should feel immensely accomplished, but no, they're not paying any attention to that. Now they may feel that their self-esteem is riding on the success of the next book. We have to look at ourselves in a way that's real, right? And again, it all comes full circle to what's going right, right? There's a lot going right in that author. That's why that author is writing best-selling books, right? Why don't we start there? And then maybe we can get to why that person might not feel as much satisfaction or why they might feel depressed. I don't know. I'm just guessing. But in order to get at that, we have to step back to what's real. And if that person doesn't describe themselves as a very successful author, we'd say, well, why? Why not? That's clearly true. If you're not owning that, it's going to be hard to feel good about your life and to feel good about yourself. So the idea here is we want to look through the lens of truth. So we can start to do that by looking at what is our story of self and what is my self-talk? What do I say to myself in those quiet moments? What's my narrative inside? If I'm beating up on myself, why? If I'm just focusing on the negative, why? Let's look at ourselves in a way that's real and true. It's not Pollyanna, right? It's saying, let's look at ourselves real in a way that's real and true. That's how we're going to solve our problems.
Yeah, so true. Let's talk about being social, because it meant something different when I was growing up. It meant hanging out with friends, sharing a meal, laughing with people I knew. And somehow being social now has the word media after it. And being social means sitting alone now in front of a screen with thousands of people you've never met that you call your friends. I'm curious, as a psychiatrist, what has this rewiring of human connection done to our mental health?
I think it's been negative for our mental health, but because we're not looking at it. Anything that has power, we should be respectful of, right? Because anything with power can do good or bad. So let's be respectful of its power. There are people who use social media and they can feel a real connection to people who they're not seeing right in front of them. So for example, the people with support groups or people with certain illness, right? They might not see the person with the illness, but they're communicating back and forth. There's something real and shared between them. That's very different than someone who thinks that they have 670 friends, because that's the number of people that are online playing some game, right? So what we need is real human connection. It's not that that can never come through social media. It's just one, it shouldn't come exclusively through social media. And often social media can take away from that. So a person who's just looking through other people's postings and other people are posting what's best, and then the person's looking and saying, oh, my life is so terrible compared to someone else's life, without realizing this is just nothing but harmful for me, right? I'm making a false sense about my own life by looking at people's posts about what's best in their life. Like, I don't want to use this powerful tool against me. So again, if we respect its power and we respect that there's a complexity around human connection, and yes, some of that needs to be face-to-face. Yes, some of it can be online, but what does that mean? Is it real connection? Is it not? We have to look at our lives, what it is that we need and what we're doing, and if it's getting us what we want. Just like with an exercise routine, if you want to lose weight and be healthier and you're going through an exercise routine and a month later, nothing has changed, it doesn't say that things are hopeless. It says, go back and look at that. Right? Let's go look at that and see, what are our goals? What route are we using to try and meet our goals? And are we succeeding?
Yeah, that's so true. You know, one simple shift that changed my entire outlook on life is I stopped saying the words, I have to. I started saying, I get to. I don't have to go to work. I get to. I don't have to go to the gym. I get to. And, you know, millions of people would give anything to be physically able to do those things that I'm like maybe dreading. And that so-called burden that we think we endure are what so many others wish they had in their lives. Is that kind of a neat way just to look at, you know, be complaining about your stubbed toe? Look at the guy with no foot.
Yes, it can be, but that can cut both ways too, because then people can beat up on themselves. Like, what's wrong with me that I can't even be grateful that I'm healthy I can't even be grateful that I have a foot because I stubbed my toe. There are people who don't have a foot, right? We can beat up on ourselves. That's not good, right? But to say, look, I want to look at what's going right. And if I'm able to get myself up and to work each day, like, there's a lot that's going right in me, physical health, mental health. Now, if that job isn't bringing me satisfaction, let me go look at that. Like, maybe I should be bringing myself to a different job, or I should be bringing myself to this job in a different way. Maybe, right? But we're looking at ourselves, and we want to look at our strengths, and we want to feel grateful for our strength, but we want to use that to empower ourselves, not to take away from ourselves, because then we don't feel like we're being grateful enough, right? So there's power to all of this, and power can cut both ways. So it is important to have a process. And that's why my hope with the book is that it does give people a route to understanding what it means to them. Does feeling grateful mean they actually end up beating up on themselves because they don't feel grateful enough? Or does feeling grateful mean I feel empowered to make my life better? So the book is designed to provide routes to understanding, and then to let that understanding lead us forward to practical ways to bring change to our lives.
Yeah, so true. I know you've helped so many people over the decades. What's the most common transformation you've witnessed when somebody finally taps into their three drives?
Well, I think that the person can find then some elements of peace, contentment, and delight, which is what we really want when we say happiness. We want to feel peace. We just want to feel like we can just be and not have the world intrude on us, our worries intrude on us. We want some contentment where I can say I'm aware of my own life, including what's difficult or what I'm not happy about, or even what's tragic. I embrace my life. I feel good about my life, even though it may be hard, and in the ways in which it's hard. I feel good about how I'm living my days. If I'm being in line with values. We want to feel contentment, and we want the capacity for delight, like children. We want to have things that can light us up when we see something, whether it's the flower that bloomed in the garden the person planted, right? Or it's a smile of someone we care about, or it's even just a smile of someone we're nice to that we don't know. We want to be able to feel some peace. We want to feel content with our lives, and we want delight. That's happiness for us. So if we don't have that, or we don't have enough of that, then we need to work towards getting it. That's how we're going to bring the goodness in our lives that we need.
Yeah, well said. Last topic we got to bring up is stress. I keep getting asked by patients, how do I deal with the stress? That mind-body connection is so undeniable. Any practical steps you can recommend to help people lower chronic stress that's eroding people's mental health?
We have to look at where it's coming from. So I would say, I don't want to just polish the hood. I mean, there are stress reduction techniques, and a lot of them are great. Muscle relaxation, you know, progressive muscle relaxation, for example, it's just an example. So we can use things to decrease stress, but I want to know where that stress is coming from and know, can we get to the roots of it, and can we make it better at the root so that we don't have to deal with the stress that's being spun off all the time? I think there's immense value in understanding, and that we should be driving towards more understanding. And there's where compassionate curiosity, really looking at ourselves, not being afraid to look at ourselves, having routes to understanding and change, then mental health isn't a scary black box anymore. It's like, oh, there it is. There's a roadmap here. I can understand this. And through that understanding, I'm going to make my life better. Now we can have at it. We can start addressing our mental health instead of being afraid and looking the other way.
Yeah, well said. Time flew by in the minute we have left. Anything else you'd like to share with the listeners that we didn't cover today?
I want to say that there is hope. I mean, so many of us can feel so hopeless that we just can't bring change to our lives, but we can. If we're feeling hopeless, it's just because we don't understand, right? Everything can be made at least somewhat better. There's room for greater life satisfaction and just feeling better to some degree in all of us, for people to carry that with them, that there is no such thing as hopelessness here. And the book is really designed to help people see that, not just see it in a theoretical way, but to see it in a way, oh, there's hope. And here's how I can get to what I want to be different. And that is always there in front of all of us. It's there for all of us.
Bravo, bravo. Thanks for joining us. The book is called What's Going Right? A Powerful New Method for Optimizing Your Mental Health. Such a unique book. I hope everybody gets a copy. And you could do that by going to drpaulconte.com. And while there, be sure and check out the many resources available, including informative articles and podcasts and videos and telehealth options. And if you heard something today that somebody you know needs to hear, send them a link to this podcast. It's available at toyourgoodhealthradio.com and peruse our podcast library. And as I always say, share these segments of interest with friends, family, coworkers, and on social media. Sharing is caring. Don't keep this information to yourself. And you can also subscribe to our podcasts on Apple, Spotify, and iHeartRadio. You can follow me on Facebook at Dr. David Friedman. On Instagram, I'm at Dr. D. Friedman. More to come. Stay tuned and stay well.